Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How you doing this week?
I am doing pretty good. Just here at the end of a week, you know, ready for the weekend and some time off of regular work and all that. So looking forward to that. How are you?
I'm good. Most things are good, but then, you know, you hit one weird snag or setback. I'll say I've been cruising for the past week or two, but then I've gotten some minor injuries, and one of the ones that were, I don't know, with my elbow with handball cropped up yesterday, and it's sort of in an area where a certain movement gives me some sharp pain. So that is not a good thing, and I am not happy about that. But that's probably a much longer story on my physical like intense stuff I put my body through that I enjoy, but also as I get older is not as easy to do anymore.
Yeah. Well, it sucks when you have something that hurts, especially if it's like during your day and you're just doing your regular thing and it's like keeps coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, but aside from that, I mean, things are grooving at Referral Rock. I've been, I don't know. We've been focused a lot on, I would say, on like the product management side and sort of a product/project management side, like sort of a handoffs between dev and product and design and all of those types of things. So kind of have taken the time to really like rework a lot of those processes, nothing major, but a lot of like little tweaks where, hey, we should add a meeting here because we seem to drift after some other ones here. We're just not on the same page, but all of that has gone really well. So
sweet.
A lot of different changes on a lot of different people's parts, but it's all added up to a much smoother process of late. So
that's good. That's always fun with the to tickle your engineering mind, like how can I make this work better.
Yeah And it's a good been a good joint effort because I have a lot of senior people, and it's good when you kind of get everyone in the same room to figure that stuff out together, because we all hold a different piece of the puzzle.
Cool. So what did you want to talk about today?
So I don't know. I know we've been exchanging articles and different things here and there that, I don't know, as much as maybe it's not fun for you, but it's like, we've, to recap our listeners, you know, Nate's been in this discovery phase, or I'd even call it, actually there was a good Lenny podcast about this from a guy that, I don't know if he's still at Meta or something like that. We'll reference it in the notes as well, but he called it understand work, which was a pretty bold category. But for me, it also just it could include development, like it could include software. Sometimes, like putting metric systems in place are like understand work. It's like work you're doing to just better understand the problems, right? So sometimes it's little growth experiments, different things like that. It's customer interviews. It's like right now you are in this big ambiguous understand work phase of like trying to figure out what you want to do next to build your bootstrap SaaS business. So
I think that's a good summary, especially the understand part, because I feel like that's half of the goal. Like when I first started looking, like trying to do the understand work, I would be like, well, I just need to optimize and do this really fast. And it's like, no, that's not the point. The point is to understand like what's going on in this market. What are people thinking about and talking about? And so you kind of like, you know, all these subtle things. It's not about optimizing.
Right. So you can find your wedge, but then have a very high level of conviction and confidence that that's the right thing to do, and commit to like, okay, now I'm going to commit some time to now understand further, right? And then you just sort of like get into these cycles where you've been doing it long enough, or you have enough evidence that supports that's the direction and that's where you should be spending your time.
Yeah, exactly. So these articles have been a lot of fun. You've sent over a few of them.
Yeah, so like we have a few. We have the Jason Cohen wrote a recent article on the startup Drake equation, which maybe we don't have to go explain to the readers, but maybe it's just like where we kind of drew some context based off of what's going on in your situation, based off of sort of how we've talked about this new thesis of mine around building a bootstrap business, a type of thing. And then We also had, I think, actually, there was one other one I didn't send you, which we might not get into, but it was on this strategic, it was one of those like LinkedIn slideshow things, but it's on, on like playing the strategy game with this. So if we have time, we'll brief through that one. That'll probably be the last one. Okay. But then the other one I sent you this morning was, you know, My First Million. If any of you listened to that, podcast or whatever, but it was an interesting take on just like, if, you know, Sean Puri, one of the hosts, is like, if I was to start over again to essentially like, you know, make a lot of money, how would I do that? And it was kind of interesting. And I thought there were some good conclusions to draw to sort of like, now how do we map this into the Bootstrap Nate brain? And then what can we take away from that?
Yeah. So where did you want to start?
Actually, let's start with that last one first. Let's start with the how to make $1 million in 5 years. Yeah. Is that it was a very clickbaity type of thing, but there's still a lot of value in it.
I think he had a lot of good concepts that he was kind of bringing up. Especially when you talked about like trying multiple times and knowing that the first time you're like almost definitely going to fail at it. Like, I thought that was really good. I've heard that from a number of different people now. And so that's starting to be like a pattern. You're like, okay, you know, it's not just one person saying this.
Yeah. It's a good mindset, because now essentially how many do you feel like you're on?
I think I've got to be on number 5 or 6 by now.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah, it depends on how many you count. You know, was it the ones? Did it count the ones that I did back in, you know, university when I was like really just floundering around?
I'd probably say no. I'd probably say there's a limit of the ones. What do you really count? Do you count the lemonade stand? Do you count
Yeah, but one of Sean's thing was, he said like it takes, on average, he thinks it takes 10 attempts to be able to get one. You know, some people get lucky and they get on the first couple tries, but most people, he said, probably about 10, and it probably takes you about a year to do an idea properly, where you actually, you know, dive into it, you know, get some experience trying it and all that sort of thing.
Right. I like that, you know, that counter pushes against one I've always not enjoyed, which was the, you know, we talked about the, you know, 10 startups in 10 months type of thing. That stuff that we haven't talked about that one in a while. And I feel like, I don't know, my headspace around the indie, developer type of thing has sort of like drifted further away from X Twitter. So I don't see that as much. I don't know. And that may still be the beat of the drum, but who knows anymore.
So. Yeah. But I feel like it takes a while to get into these ideas and to actually develop them to the point where you know something about the customer, you know something about the market, and you have some sort of solution that you've actually reasonably tried to market. Cause like it actually takes like at least a month of even just trying your first attempt at marketing to see if like, you know, there's any traction there. Like, sure, maybe you get some response after a week or a day or something, but like, unless it's going off to the moon, like, I feel like you got to take a couple cracks at it and give it some time to percolate.
I mean, I like that first, going back to doing, you know, 10 tries, it's sort of just like 10 real tries, like 10 in-depth tries, I think make a lot of sense. And just it's a nice good mindset thing too, just being, again, like, okay, just because I failed once, twice, three times, that doesn't mean, you know, this is still a small sample size. And going back to the skills, he said, like, how can you win when you're losing? I liked kind of that part.
Yeah.
Stuff we've talked about before, I think I've called them like assets, like building your different skills and assets and things like that. And even in the notion of like, what I do believe out of the, you know, that general vice of trying to do more of the things is like, that's like doing more things rapidly. It's like you can accelerate that learning. But if you are, maybe this is the light of that other side of the indie do 10. Mm. It's like, okay, now you're learning at least a little bit about marketing and a little about pushing product out that you're uncomfortable with. Like, I understand that some people feel that way. And for them, that is the hump to get over. I don't think that's your hump. So, you know, but that it might not be a good, like, hey, let me just build that muscle so I know that could be done. And kind of everyone has like different friction in different areas of that are going to hold them back.
Yeah. And I think you're exactly right. Like, that's what the 10 tries is for, is learning all these different skills. And I think part of that is also not just doing the thing that you're good at, right? Like doing the part that you're not good at too, because you're going to have to, that's where you probably actually need to do a bunch of learning.
Yes.
Like for me, especially it's been marketing. It's like, I've tried so many different marketing things and I've learned so much doing that. That is not really maybe natural to me. Like I really, it's especially at the beginning, it was really hard to do marketing. Now it feels a little easier because I feel like I know a little bit of where I'm going. But yeah, just, I think the whole part of the tries is just to learn. And there's kind of another part that I think he touched on really briefly in the episode there that I thought was really good, was that hits home to me, is just the set yourself up so you can make these multiple tries. Like,
right.
You need to know what you need to live on. Like, especially for me, I've got a family and stuff like that. It's like, and maybe some advice I heard from a mentor one time was, don't throw away your old shoes until you're sure that the new ones are working. And basically the point is like, until you can see, some sustainability, like don't go all in on something that, if you have to have a backup plan too.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I think those are things that, depending on the personality type, right? Like again, might be a different friction point for different people. Cause for me, like and I think also probably for you, it's like, we're not necessarily, and I don't want us to sound in a bad way, but like status chasing. Like I don't care how it looks, what car I drive, what clothes I wear necessarily, like to a certain level. Like I don't want to look like a schlep totally. But but at the same time, I don't hold that in very like high order importance for me personally. Mm-hmm. Right. So but like if someone that does, and then saying, hey, you always have to be thinking about, living within your means and like saving more and being scrappy and all these others. Like for some people, that's really, really hard, right? Like it's like their motivational engine to even get them going is like, I want to be able to have that nice shirt. And like, that's what makes this all worthwhile for me. Right. So if that's not their and you're taking that motivation away from them because they can't do it, then it's almost like, unless they learn that like, okay, well maybe I do learn to like, before I buy that shirt, I'm going to have to wait like a year before I can afford it. So maybe it's like not saying no, but putting it at something that is a little more palatable for them. But like I'm a default, like I don't set budgets because I'm a default like
saver,
saver, or it's harder to get me to spend money. So it's like, that's not a challenge for me, but I know it is for other people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. He also talked a bunch about like getting lucky. And he had like a bunch of different kind of like types of luck that I thought was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Kind of the one that I've heard a bunch of times is like the luck surface area kind of concept are you, yes, people are lucky, but also like they've been putting themselves in different situations that allow them to be lucky, right? Like they've gone and met so many different people that know them for whatever. And so now when any of those people have something come up, they come to him. I think that's a really, really cool idea.
Yeah. And that's something that's probably harder as you get older, right? And more and more have a family and these other things. Like, for example, if I didn't do one of those types of things, like, we talked about UberNote before, but UberNote joined an accelerator in DC, in Washington, DC, and one of those like kind of like a Y Combinator type of thing in the early days. And that's how I met one of our mutual friends, Mike, which if I never met him, like I never would have met you through our group. So like that was one of those things. So we sort of had, you run into these things by, because I went through that accelerator. Mike was in there with a different co-founder. This was 15 years ago, right? Like, so
crazy.
But these are the types of things. But like at that time, didn't have kids. And it's like, okay, yeah, I'm working on this startup idea. I'm working on this thing. We're getting some traction. We need some funding. Like all those things happened to me, right? But then it's all adds up to where I am today. Because if UberNote didn't happen, I don't know if Referral Rock would have happened, because a lot of it was born out of frustrations that didn't work in UberNote. Like all these things, right? Yeah. So I definitely take that one to heart more as I'm trying to, I would say, go to more events and meet more people. Even though, again, at this age, it's easy to not have to, right? It's harder to make friends. It's harder to meet people. But the energy I got last year in like going to a couple conferences, and not just necessarily like the people I already know, but just tangentially meeting, you know, additional people, and it sounds weird to just label as like networking, but it's also, he never used that word, but if that was a word that was more commonly understood, it was probably that.
Yeah. And I also find it hard, you know, trying to find like what's a good use of time in terms of, you know, meeting people and that sort of thing too. I think I've really dialed that down. I maybe do a bit of like stuff on social to try and get to know people, but it's not quite the same as meeting people in person.
Right. What did you think of the white belt stuff? Because that one kind of cropped up for me for you when he talked about, he had this section on like white belt level business ideas that are recommended for beginners. Mm-hmm. And one of them was like a marketing agency. I'm not suggesting you do that necessarily, but it had me thinking of like, you know, you have consulting, you do this consulting, and I don't know if that's, if you decide like, could, and I know you're in a nice position where like you can take what work comes in and it's, you know, again, how you're managing it. But if you treated that like the first class business.
Yeah. So I have thought about that actually a bunch of times, this white belt idea. And one version of that was, I thought, well, like I'll pick the like easiest to master skill business that I possibly could. Like, I don't know, I already know how to paint, and painting is a fairly straightforward thing to do, but you know, like, should I just go start a painting business and just like outperform everybody? Cause like, you know, I could use some tech things. I could, you know, all these things.
And right. Could that give you a competitive advantage?
Yeah. And I've thought about it with a couple of different things. Just talking to, like, I talked to a guy that built decks, and just to listen to his processes and stuff, I'm like, man, like I could do something cool with that. And that's maybe something for down the road. I don't know. And I've also thought about that with my software business too. And I guess what's kind of stopped me from doing that so far is that where I'm at feels like a very nice mix. So I can like work on side projects and build them out. And then I can also have this thing that I know is stable that can kind of like be my backup. And I'm maybe a bit concerned with the consulting business to scale that up, because I'm worried about having to fire people really quickly when the business is maybe not there for it. Whereas I feel like with a software as a service type business, there might be more stability.
Right.
And that's kind of where I've been like, I'm not so sure about that.
I get that. And I guess that's the two things I'd say is like, one, if you're 100% focused to that instead of like doing side projects and really the project, what then it is on the marketing side of like getting other business, right? It's sort of like, as much as it's hard to, but you know, you wouldn't hire until you
could sustain,
had enough
it,
confidence
course.
in your sure. sustainability of projects, right? Because I think you have a lot of steady customers, so it's also like, could I have someone help me with those? And like, could having those and having a person, finding the right person, not saying you're building a 20-person agency, but even like a, you know, having one or two other people that at the worst you can backfill, but at the best, like it saves you time, and you know, maybe there's some margin in there for you, or there is margin in for, not maybe, there should be that margin in there for you. Right. Cause I know like your wife helps out too, from the, like the accounts receivable and billing and some of the other, like, I think office admin types of work that helps too. So kind of thinking of it in that light. And then one other thought is, could you intermix that luck surface area part he talked about? Okay. So where are you getting your business now? I don't know. And also, we're talking about like other industries you're interested in, or even like, if you think about, could you code marketing projects, like marketing calculators? Like, it's almost like, could you start to seed yourself in other areas, not necessarily trying to build the same? I know a lot of your clients might be like not as much in the tech world or whatever, right? But what projects could you even take on that are just like, hey, these are just fun little tools to build, like fun little, you know, it's like, is this stuff on Upwork? Is this stuff on, and I'm not necessarily looking for them to make money, but I'm actually looking to build relationships, find people that actually have problems to solve. I get to meet and get insight into certain areas, and almost I'm using that to expand my surface area of finding problems, finding potential, like, you know, types of
things. One of the things where I've kind of maybe drawn boundaries between the building SaaS versus building consulting is that generally the people who want custom software have a very unique perspective on their particular problem, and they are very opinionated about how that problem is solved. That's usually why they've come in the first place. And it's a lot, very much an enterprise kind of sell. Like, it's like, you know, you're, they've got to have a certain level of commitment, and it's a long sales cycle, all those kinds of things. But then the SaaS side of it is anybody who wants custom software doesn't want everyone else to have it. They want to have it themselves. And if they are willing to take a discount, like they're willing to have like, well, I'll pay less for it, and then you get the rights to maintain the rights
or something like that. Yeah.
Pretty much every time that that happens, that is a poor customer who is unwilling to pay for their services. And so
if they're willing to trade that, the competitive advantage is not like they know that that is worth more. If I can afford it, it's like the right level of customer as well. It's like a self-selection process.
Yeah. And so really the experience I've had, like, I think in theory there is something there, and I'm not, maybe I just haven't found it yet. But I think in practice, I've found that those people don't seem very compatible with the idea.
Well, I guess I didn't necessarily meaning like take software idea and then like find more customers out of it. I mean, that is a way.
Well, that's basically what a SaaS would be, right? Like if you found problems, you would solve it, and maybe you'd solve it a different way or something to, you know, protect that client's original idea or something. But
I guess more of what I was going with that, with the surface area of luck part, which was more of imagine over the course of the next, let's say, it could be like 3 or 6 months. Again, I have no experience in this area, so it could be awful, put yourself on Upwork and find some, like, pick projects that are interesting. Mm-hmm. And also don't look at them as like, I want to make a profit out of this, like give a good value. Mm. Like, okay, I'm going to make $30 an hour for this. I know I'm not, but this seems like an interesting project. Like, I feel like with my experience, these other things, it's like find over the next, like, let's say 3 or 6 months, my goal is to do like 10 very different projects with a limited scope. Like, hey, I don't want to do 6 month long projects. I want these to be you know, 40 hour projects. And this is my bidding criteria. But my sole goal is to meet and find and understand different people in these different industries. And I get to pick what seems interesting. So it's almost like you're using this as the, whatever we call, understand work. It's like, yes, it will at least net to, like, you're not losing anything out of it. But what you do is you get insights into an industry. And it doesn't mean that you can scale that product, but also, like, now maybe I have a person that knows that. Actually, do you have these other problems? Right. Like, I know part of the stuff you were talking about on, like, trying to reach other people in customer service roles or customer service managers as you've been digging more into, like, the help desk software area. Yep. But this might be a way to just, like, know and find other things and choose, pick that as a luck surface area thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. And that is actually what has drawn me to the customer service side of things, is just the people that I've worked with. I've generally gravitated to helping the customer service people, even though they might not be the original client, because I can really sympathize with, you know, the problems they face. And I know a lot about the working space that they're in, and being able to help them with that. And what's been cool is I have a bunch of different clients that are very different stages. And so to kind of learn, you know, what customer service looks like at each of those different stages and kind of what problems they talk about at those different stages has been really helpful too. I think really that the job now is to try and figure out, are some of these problems generalizable? And, you know, maybe different companies have very different problems depending on what other software they're using or whatever processes they use, that sort of thing. So yeah, trying to increase the sample size, I guess, now is the task.
Increase that surface area and different samples. I would even say, and even as a residual benefit, if you're like, come up with a good way routine, like, I know oftentimes before you had these routines around like, hey, I set up all these RSS feeds, like I read these newsletters just to expose your brain to other industries and areas. But if it is building software, like it's just starting to train your eye on looking through Upwork stuff, do you start to recognize patterns of like other, you know, it's just like, huh, a lot of people have this problem. A lot of people from these industries have this problem. There doesn't seem to be a natural solution or one that people are finding before they even I mean, gosh, when you go to the pain of like saying, I'm going to need custom software built and like mm-hmm. you write up a spec and willing to go and do that, that's a high bar of pain that mm-hmm. you're willing to get. Like, you had to probably shop and search first, my guess is most people were trying to find an easy button first, like what off mm-hmm. the shelf is. I asked friends and no one does this esoteric thing when there's 100 people looking for that same esoteric thing. Is yeah, that just yeah. the, you know, it's almost like you take that, if that pain point is long enough, big enough that I want custom software to do X, like mm-hmm. what, how many other people have this same one? Now, it could be just very random niche thing, mm-hmm. or it could also be like, I just couldn't find an off the shelf solution that did this. And, you know, is there something in that water?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. And I think that is something I kind of have on my to-do list. Yeah, I've been kind of taking a different approach on that so far, trying to talk to people and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Cool. Trying to think if there's any other things I wanted to mention out of that. I think those were probably the big ones. So the mindset on like, you know, just overcoming or just understanding that this is a sport and you've got to mm-hmm. do a lot of things. Now, the nice thing is once you figure one out, like it can make a big difference in reaching your goals. Mm-hmm. And just the white belt parts was like, how can we utilize some of the things you already have, right? It kind of leaned into those, and we actually kind of made a hybrid idea between skill sets and spreading luck yeah, your surface yep. area of luck, in addition to some business aspects that at least are a net, like not a loss, because it's your time yep. that you already can allocate to these endeavors at this point. Cool. Yeah. All right. Startup Drake equation. I mean, what I got out of this, the biggest thing I have is, I don't even know what the Drake equation, I honestly didn't really care that much about his kind of preamble into it, but it did get into, you know, a list of things that are in the article that he just said, these are like, what is it? These are some factors that failure in any one of these would be like terminal to a business. Yeah.
What I think I got from the Drake equation analogy is that for the Drake equation to work, you have to have a little bit of all of these things. You can't have like zero on anything. Right. Otherwise, it's just going to fall apart. It's like you need this and then this and then this and then that. And so then his list was basically, here's the thens of like what you need to have for your business to actually work.
Well, let's read through them and we can just say yay or nay if we think sure. of it for this scenario that we're trying mm-hmm. to build for you. So like... Mm-hmm. Product that people want to pay for. Yeah. Yay, obvious. Okay, so that's an easy one. Number two, able to grab those people's attention amidst the noisy internet.
Yeah, that seems to make sense.
I would say a little less on this one, kind of going with that thesis of like, if we're looking for something with a low churn rate and you just need a few and you're willing to even like trudge up the hill for each one, but you know each one is going to stay for a really long time. Like,
yeah. That's a good point.
For actually. Me, it's like on the small scale enough, you can get lucky enough times that like yeah. it can add up to something substantial for you.
I know two businesses actually that are software businesses where the founders have driven out to each business that they pitched and right. manually got their first like 200 customers, and you know they're not nothing businesses.
Right. And if you know that they're going to be a high LTV, like it's worth it, even though it's like, I know they're, once I get my hooks in and I'm built into their processes, like they're never leaving me unless they're going yeah. out of business. So pricing that those people, so number three is pricing that those people will accept and that is greater than your costs. Well, definitely the greater than the cost.
Yeah.
And willing and to also, accept. So yes.
Yeah. That's kind of required for transaction.
Yes. So that kind of, yeah, that goes up into the first one. So I'd probably, there's some subgroups in here. I don't think he necessarily did, but he just has a nice list. Competitive and distinctive enough to be chosen.
Yeah, I think like you could go like low on the distinctive part if you wanted to be like the second choice. Like I think it would be better to be distinctive, but you could also just take all of the people that hate Trello, you know, like you right. could do that.
Right. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think this goes back to when I had my equation for you before, which was that our number one is like I said, or number three, I said like be 10x better. And actually that I'm willing to kind of dial back to kind of more what Jason says. It's just like distinctive enough to be chosen. I like, yeah. Yeah. I like that. Okay. And then able to build the product as promised by the homepage. I think that's just don't yep. trick people. So that's, yep. Yes, but I don't think you have to worry about that. Like, that's not your native, you know, unless you grew up in the sales world, maybe.
Yeah, or if you're building an AI company.
Yeah. Next one is sustained value delivery months and years later, so customers stay long and keep paying. So that's the same thing as our sort of like, I mean, this has to fit a good SaaS model. So yeah,
you got to be delivering value, otherwise people are going to cancel.
Yeah. Able to fund the venture either through early profits or fundraising.
Yeah, or sweat equity.
Not fundraising, but it's basically like you're able to, you have time and resources to do this that you're not going to. Yeah. So I think that's,
we're not building the next. We're not building the next rocket ship or something.
Yeah, that kind of goes without saying for you. And I know his audience is often like broader, but mostly probably bootstrap type of people. But next is able to work well with co-founders or able to do it alone. So
yeah, makes sense. You have to be able to get along with people.
Develop a repeatable and profitable customer acquisition process.
Yeah, although there's people that just like do random stuff and they just every month they've got a new acquisition process and somehow they scratch and claw their way.
Yeah. Like, and again,
I don't want to do that.
That depends on that side of the equation, but I could see not necessarily having to be as strong a requirement for you. Able to attract and retain talent. Nope, not necessary.
Well, you know, retain yourself, I guess.
Yeah. So
for the first while.
I think, if anything, that goes back to, you know, some of the things we said, like, you know, we talked about who do you want to serve? And that kind of makes that. So it's like, do I want to keep doing this? Right. So I think that probably goes more to your founder energy and your founder, like sort of why am I doing this? And if it is really hard, like, why do I keep doing it? Because I like at the juice is worth the squeeze at the end, because either I'm really helping this type of person and I like that person and I want them to win. And I think that probably goes more into like the choosing your customer side we've talked about before, choosing who you want to serve. We only have two more. So able to psychologically handle many years of deep effort, stress, and pain. That actually, we kind of covered that one just now.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, as you have more reps at it, it doesn't have to be so stressful and painful. It can just be, you know, kind of hard, but not horrible.
And then last, we have get lucky on occasion, which actually tied very well into the Sean Peary stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's good.
So,
yeah,
I mean, he goes through other stuff that I think are really interesting in the article, but that was just sort of like, how do you try to make this easier within those? I think it's still a good and worth the read. I don't know if we necessarily need to go through all that either.
Yeah, I think what's tricky with these, though, is like they're nice things to point out as like requirements. But I think to actually like figure out a way to satisfy those requirements and to be working through those murky waters, trying to figure it out, I think that's where the hard stuff happens. Because I think I've noticed that with like a lot of these different pieces of advice from, you know, from Jason Cohen and others, where it's like there's so much like, hey, you should do this. And there's exceptions to that. And you should do that. And there's exceptions to that. And, you know, there's not really a way forwards, but, you know, figure it out. And I think it's just hard. And I think, you know, all these little bits of advice are helpful on some level, but also it's like, this isn't a math equation where you can just, you know, follow the process and then it will work kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 That is the challenge with some of these. What I do like, you know, and again, if we're talking about both of these, you know, pieces of content, what's interesting is like, you know, Sean's one was targeted towards like, you know, people just out of college, like the whole story he's telling and isn't the conventional thing you would, you know, if you saw this coming across your YouTube feed, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, there is a lot to be said because one, it was very targeted towards like, you knew who this audience was. But we did read it, or we did listen, or at least I did, to start and said, hey, take a listen to this. Let's talk about it. But if you think about like his content was very targeted towards that, but there was obviously things for everyone to learn. Yeah. And then on the flip side, you do look at things like Jason Cohen and the critique you just kind of gave with reading articles like that is it's trying to solve it like it's a problem for everyone. So then they can't, it's like the audience is broad, or he is also writing this kind of for himself as he's like working through. I think he's very much a systems and wants to figure out truth, seek the world and figure out these things. And he has some amazing takes. But the challenge is like, you know, you read this and you're like, he's also trying to make sure it's like, well, it's for bootstrap founders, but if you want to raise funding, that's fine. Like, he's very open. So it's also hard to figure out what is for you unless you already know what isn't for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But I guess like it's just like it's an unsolvable problem in some ways too, right? Like, it's like, you've got, even if, you know, I was to sit down with Jason Cohen and ask him for, you know, 2 hours, all of his thoughts, like, I feel like even then there's all these like things that you, like advices that you can follow, but they don't guarantee success. And there's not, there's not one way to do it. And I think you just kind of, and maybe that's part of this, is just, you know, learning those skills by, you know, learning all of these different pieces of advice and why they matter and why they don't, and figuring out when to apply them and when not to. I don't know.
Yeah. The challenge is, it takes experience to know when to apply and when not to, right? Like, or you're on one side of the spectrum or the other, or you don't know enough and you need to be kind of just told step by step. And that was sort of Sean's, you know, these are really just like different marketing, right? Like, you have the one that is very targeted and very specific. Mm-hmm. So he's not talking about, like, he lets other stuff leak in, but for the most part is talking to one person. Where, like, there's so much in Jason's that, like, any one person may not see the whole picture, right? Like, there's a lot in there that may not be for them, but they don't know. He doesn't know who, you know, he's writing it. Sure. It seems to be like a broader audience, which also means like, it's going to resonate with certain people, but also he didn't specifically try to call them out, and he's trying, it almost seems like he's writing it more for a broader swath of people. Anyway.
Yeah. But at any rate, it's been good food for thought. And I think it's just interesting to talk through and see what other people think about these things.
It is. It definitely is. So, I don't know, maybe there's some, like, we've
good stuff.
Notice some actionable stuff for you, but yeah, I don't know. I think that's, I don't think we'll get to that other one. Maybe I'll save that for later, that one on strategy, but it could be some other thing. I'll share with you ahead of time too, because it's nice to have your pre-thoughts rather than sometimes I just spring something on you.
Yeah. Allow me to formulate my thoughts. Sounds good. Well, this has been a lot of fun talking about this stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Nate. I will talk to you later.
Yeah, thank you. See ya.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Boscher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.